Welcome to Travel Market Life, your companion for industry insights and professional business development. Travel Market Life. Join us by webcast, video or podcast.
Welcome to the new Hospitality Monthly Review Show, February 2024 edition, with our panel, Tibor Katala, CEO of Katala Consulting, and Johnny Seabury, Group Revenue Manager at Sarova. In our review shows, we look at pressing issues in the industry, as well as the landscape in front of us, getting insider knowledge from our expert panel. In this episode, I'll take a moment to introduce our panelists and what makes them tick as we tackle what lies ahead in 2024. We'll be looking at 2024 on the books, what's the data telling us, industry challenges, consumer travel trends, and finally, I'll put my panelists through their paces as we dive into the quick quiz head to head. Who will be the true industry expert in this month's edition? Disclaimer, all opinions are their own. I'm your host, Ryan Haynes. Let's get on with the show.
Travel Market Life.
Hello, 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 hello. Hi, guys. Thank you very much for joining me. Tibor, Johnny, it's great to have you guys here. Thank you so much for joining us. So Tibor Katala, CEO of Katala Consulting. You've been working in the hospitality industry and working across quite a bit, really. Do you want to give us a bit of a background and cover off, really, sort of like what makes you shine in the industry?
Okay, yeah. So my name is Tibor Katala. I'm the founder and managing director of Katala Consulting. We are an outsourced revenue management company based in London, but we're looking at a portfolio of hotels across Europe. And yeah, what makes me shine? Actually, I don't know, but we are quite approachable and very efficient. Like we are optimizing a large portfolio across Europe, and we are driven by of course the results, but yeah, that's my team has been wonderful, and we have seen some significant growth in the last few months as well. So yeah, happy to be here and share my insight and ideas on some various topics.
Yeah, I mean, you're no stranger some of these panels and podcasts. You've been involved in quite a few, and certainly where we got to meet one another over the years and had the opportunity to exchange a lot of ideas. Now, what are you expecting from the UK and European market to perform this year?
Well, first of all, we have seen a strong start in the UK and in Europe, with January being a good month, and we see that Q1 will be quite a strong quarter as well across Europe and the UK. We have a bit less. People are still watching for what's going to happen this year, because you see like there's a lot of uncertainties around geopolitical trends, the cost of living, which is increasing. So there's a lot of uncertainties in 2024 that people are still watching to see what's going to happen. But in a very short term, like January Q1, we see already some strong growth. And step by step, we are seeing some recovery for some key markets like the corporate, the leisure, and so on. But I'm quite optimistic about 2024, and I still believe we should all focus on the positive things. But there is some uncertainty for the rest of the year that needs to be developed and closely monitored. But so far, I believe it will be a good year.
I mean, we are going to be diving a little bit deeper into some of these uncertainties, but could you, off the top of your head, just tell us a couple that you think, you know, we just need to be a little bit wary of at the moment?
I think the biggest one nowadays is geopolitical tension, and that's putting a lot of pressure on the international market. Even if you see what's going on in France with the current strikes, that being all over the news and as well in Europe, and you know, like international market, when they see some kind of chaos anywhere in Europe or in Paris, they believe like a full Europe is on fire. So that's also impacting the tourism trend for Europe and for some key cities.
Coming over to Johnny Seabury, for the Group Revenue Manager at Sarova Hotels. Thanks again for joining us. So tell us about Sarova Group there.
Sarova's been in the UK since about 1980. I think it was first incorporated over there. There's a branch in Kenya as well, where it originally started. It's a family-owned business and remains family-owned to this day. And some of the brothers back in the late 70s came over to the UK and acquired a few properties and have been in the business of hospitality ever since, and they've, you know, bought and sold and moved on and developed and so on many hotels in their time. And at the moment we've got four properties in the UK. We've got the Rembrandt in London, which is the flagship in Knightsbridge, just opposite the V&A Museum. We've got Sir Christopher Wren in Windsor, the Bullet Hotel in Gerrards Cross, and the Abbey in Great Malvern. And at the moment, all of our focus is on making them as brilliant as we can do.
You've been there quite a while, John, because that's where you and I first crossed paths. And
yeah,
this was quite a while ago in one of my first roles in the industry. But I understand it's also where you started your career, more or less, wasn't it?
It's not long after I started my career. I did hotel management at university, and actually in Bermuda. I lived there for 3 years.
Wow.
Which was amazing, to be honest. I spent most of the 3 years on the beach and partying, but I was 18, 19, 20, so what can you expect? But I graduated from there, left Bermuda, came back, and from Ireland originally, but I came back to the UK and settled here. And I worked 3 years as a night manager and a reception manager in Bloomsbury, and then left from there, went to Serova, was there for 2 years. This is mid-90s. I left, again, moved on to a few other properties and hotel companies around London, and came back again in 2005 to Serova, and have been there ever since. So I'm almost 20 years this tour of duty. And if you add on the previous tour, I'm already over 20 years at Serova. Great company. It's a family. It's not just a job or an office where you go to. The whole philosophy and discipline within the buildings and all of the staff. I mean, I'm 20 years there, and that's not long service. There's people who've been there over 30, 35 and 40 years.
Wow. They've
literally since their first job from school, and have been there ever since. And it's just a great place. They look after the staff and the guests really well. So
that's lovely. There, I mean, you don't hear that so much anymore, do you? Where there's actually that, firstly, a family environment, but also that level of retention to be there for such a long period of time. And people are really happy to stay at a company that long. So you've seen so many changes. You went through that disastrous 2008 period onwards, and now you've come through that pandemic onto the other side. As we come through into 2024, you know, we've just entered February. Any interesting booking patterns you've seen so far?
Oh, my God. Booking patterns are just, there's no pattern. It's out the window. Honestly, the pickup and the new business that we were receiving early January was unprecedented for us. It was manic busy. The phones, emails for bedrooms and event business was crazy. The biggest volume of new business that we've ever seen in that, you know, first couple of weeks of the year. In terms of patterns, it didn't last, because then as we got into the second half of January, it reverted back to what January normally is, where the phones are quiet, emails are quiet. Really can't put a finger on why or explain why, but it's unusual. We're at the mentality now of adapting day to day, depending on what comes in. Seasonality doesn't exist. There's no trends. We've stopped comparing to, you know, 2019 and before, because whatever business and patterns that we had back then, which was consistent, it doesn't exist anymore. 2022, we were just coming out of lockdown. All bets were off. 2023 was a reasonably free and open year for travel. But again, patterns then compared to now, we're just seeing no consistency. No consistency. 2023, there was very little rate resistance. And as we know, industry-wise, cost, not just our industry, all industries, cost, food costs and utility costs and staffing costs are going up and up and up and up. To maintain a business, you've got to be able to obviously cover those costs. And so your selling price has to go up. And in 2023, it did. We're now seeing a little bit more price resistance in 2024. We're not able to drive rate as much as we have done, but we're now being able to drive more occupancy at the higher rates. And that's kind of, So that's a switch in strategy for us from last year to this year. And we've accepted that that's the way it is. That's the market. And, you know, we need to adapt our rate pricing strategy, our revenue management strategy, and go after the, you know, the customer base in that direction.
It's interesting. I mean, we're just looking at some of the data, and this is from STR's latest forecast for 2024. That still shows rates are still growing, but at around 3%. So not a huge level of growth there. And perhaps when you put in inflation on top of that, is there actual rate growth? Is there actual revenue growth? When you hear those sorts of numbers, is that in line with what you're seeing, Johnny? Is there a concern there that, you know, you will see revenue sort of decline over the course of this year, even if rates are increasing mildly?
I don't think we won't see revenue decrease, but we'll probably see profitability decrease. Food costs and utility costs have seemed to stabilize, and even wage cost has also stabilized quite a lot compared to what it was 2022 and 23, where it was out of control. Growth was unstoppable, but it stabilized. We've acclimatized our pricing accordingly. We've controlled our costs accordingly as well as best you can. So we're kind of at a stalemate position now, but small increases in rate, maybe I think 3% even is a bit ambitious. And it's early to tell. And, you know, I've seen other reports and forecasts for the year that say rates are going to drop and some say they're up. And frankly, nobody knows. Really, nobody knows. We're just going to have to make the best of it, use our experience, our education, the data that we've got to plan and strategize as best we can and hope for the best.
Thibault, I mean, obviously, we're talking about unpredictability and being wary of things coming into this year. How are you seeing great rates when we look at sort of STR's latest forecast?
I still believe there is some opportunities for rate growth, because at the end of the day, the market will dictate the rate growth. So your market, your competitor will drive this kind of movement. And if the full market, for example, in London, start to grow by 3-4% because they need to absorb the inflation as well, you will automatically follow. Now, at the end of the day, it's not like a black or white. Do we grow our rate or do we focus much more on occupancy? It really depends on your current business. It really depends if you have been through this kind of renovation recently, if you have repositioning. So I've seen some hotels, even this year, we have grown by 20-30% on rate, but because they're in this phase of acceleration and they have better product and offer, where I've seen some hotels which are actually dropping their rate compared to last year. So I don't think there is like a one and for all answer to this question. I believe we just need to be balanced and agile in our strategy. I agree with John. There's still some season in the market that we can identify and predict. However, we still see very short booking window, like where people are just focusing on the next few weeks. That's the kind of visibility we have right now. Mm-hmm. And that's also putting a lot of pressure and uncertainty for the rest of the year. But those kind of pattern are changing the food market. And again, in your pricing strategy, relying on gut feeling is important, don't get me wrong, but I believe today you have some tools such as dynamic pricing or powered by machine learning and AI that can always identify some patterns and opportunities that are not visible by human. And those kind of tools, I've seen some good growth on to help achieve the not only the rate growth, not only the occupancy growth, but the RevPAR growth. And I think that those kind of tools needs to be leveraged, and the adoption of those tools in the market are still at a very, very low point. But for anyone listening, even if you have it or if you don't, I encourage you to be curious and to see those tools, because they work and they help you support your growth as well.
And you use those tools in Katala Consulting, do you?
We have our own BI tool to gather all the data for all our clients in a single platform. Mm-hmm. And we as well recommend source and deploy dynamic pricing tools, revenue management system for our clients. And this worked. When we see like moving from a fixed rate for the full year or for 1 month, like we have one rate for 1 month and then another one for a second month, which still exists, by the way, to the full dynamic pricing, when we do like between 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 change a day with some systems, that's black and white, and the performance has been growing quite fast as well with the use of those tools.
It is fascinating. I've had this conversation a few times, and I know it's a different segment in accommodation, but with self-service apartments and also with Airbnbs, and they, or even holiday rentals, and they absolutely detest the dynamic pricing and pricing tools that are available to them, often that are run through a lot of the platforms that they're using to sell. And the reason they have this feeling is because they have recurring customers, and their customers are used to paying a particular rate. And if that rate drastically changes, they lose that customer. And often they don't then get the occupancy that they need. And actually, a lot of them have decided to completely switch off any dynamic pricing and go back to the old way of pricing, of just having flat rates for certain periods of the year to guarantee those customers, and also to look after the guests that they've been having for such a long time, and those recurring guests. Because as you say, you know, yes, you've got to take into account the fact that costs are increasing, inflation, etc. But at the same time, you know, people sort of budget a certain amount for a certain holiday for a certain time of year. And if that trip is going to be significantly more than they budgeted for, you've either put them off totally, your brand or your business, and therefore they end up looking elsewhere or just abandoning it altogether. I get it for corporate hotels when there is sort of money to flex there, but I do sort of query this for more the leisure and particularly non-city leisure hotels.
But for me, I think it's a balance between your dynamic pricing tools as well using correctly your CRM and your information on your guests, and making sure you identify the long-term value of each of your guests. Because those guests, most probably, they will call the hotel, they won't book online, they won't book on your website. And when they call the hotel, you have this chance to make a difference or to maybe replicate the same rate that they had before, or to add value to the current offer at the same price. But you have the chance to make good to them when they call you. The dynamic pricing works because that's playing with a full data and not only the regular guest. But that's, I believe, the right, most optimal approach. It's using those tools for dynamic pricing and using it with your CRM to make sure you understand the LTV, the long-term value of each of your customer, and personalize it as much as possible to make sure you continue with your regular guest and you don't disappoint them because the price have increased. I fully understand this. That's very important to consider.
I was just going to say, I totally agree with what Thibaut was just saying about customer retention and pricing. We know, because we're involved in the industry, and prices vary massively from January to, say, June or July, you know, from low season to peak season. They can double or triple sometimes, and that's just demand pricing. It's the way it is. We understand that a lot of our customers and guests don't overly get it. And like you say, Thibaut, they pay one price once, they want to come back, they love their experience, want to come back, and they've got to book again, and it's 2-3 times the price. And looking after, I look at pretty much all of the emails that we receive into our central reservations inbox on a daily basis. I'll scan through them and just have a look. And I think it's important for me to get a sense of what our customers are asking us, what they want, what they need, what they're looking for. And I often see that question, or we stayed with you. Some of them are as extreme as, I stayed with you in 1986 and it was £4.03, and now it's £500. Why has it gone up so much? That's rare. But you know, a lot of people who stayed last year and they want to stay this year, or pre-COVID and they want to come back again, and things like that. And prices have changed. And although the published rate is X number of pounds, whatever it is, you know, absolutely, we're more than happy to look at this customer and look at the profile and the history and go, do you know what? We'd love to have you back, and there's a special for you. You can have 20 or 30 or 50% off or whatever, or you can have this price. Or if you wait till next week or next month, we're going to send out an email campaign with a winter sale offer or a summer sale or an Easter offer or whatever it's going to be. You're on the database. When that comes through, you know, keep an eye out for it, book it, and this is what the price is going to be. And we'll tip people off in that way. But in the normal run of life, we've got a really simple strategy. It's so basic. We offer, in all four of our hotels, everything includes breakfast. We don't do room-only rates. Everything includes breakfast. You've got non-refundable, and you've got fully flexible. That's it. Two rate plans, all include breakfast, all room types, and we distribute that through our own website and the two main OTAs. That's our public face. We don't get complicated with 6-month discount or a dinner package or room only and breakfast and length of stay, 10 nights is this price or 5 nights is that price and all this stuff. It just complicates things. The bookers, they don't understand it. It's what is the paralysis by analysis?
Oh, I completely agree, Johnny. I was looking at booking a hotel recently, a luxury hotel down in Devon, and they had about 7 or 8 different rooms. They had about 9 different room rates for each room, and I was bamboozled. I love this hotel. It's a beautiful hotel, but firstly, I can't tell the difference between 3 different types of rooms, apart from I think that one's an extra 3 square foot bigger. Yeah. I don't understand why they're offering me breakfast, a dinner option, a room only option. There was 2 or 3 other options, and I was like, well, why can't you just add that on later in the process? You're really confusing me here. And in the end, as you say, paralysis. Like I need to have a proper long conversation with someone to make that decision. The idea that everything comes with breakfast or it's only room and you've got to add everything else on, that's why I tend to find it so much easier just to go to Premier Inn. Because I'm not...
Whoa. No. How dare you? Shame on you, Mr. Haynes. Anyway, but you know what? Similarly, they keep it simple. It's simple, straightforward. You know what you're booking. You book it, done, end of, and then you just turn up and stay. And we have the same sort of philosophy. We've had it for 20 years, and it works well. And we've always seen in our STR results and forecasts and rate shoppers and stuff. I don't know if this is the right forum to use this expression, but I've used it internally. It's kind of like the hare and the tortoise, whereas all the other hotels are the hares that just go racing off into the head and go, oh, let's complicate this room type, and this one faces east, so that's a different type, and you get the sun in the morning, that one faces west, you get the sun in the evening, and all of this, and breakfast and dinner, blah, blah, blah. And we just go, look, it's a superior, an executive, or a club room. Pay now, pay later, that's it. And we just follow slowly behind with our simple pricing strategy. But we've always held more than our fair market share, and in most cases, exceeded the results of our SDR comp set. And the guys who complicate the thing and trying to make it creative and imaginative and all the rest of it, we just plod along slowly behind them, but we always seem to be in the lead. We have a bigger market share, better rate, better profitability, and it works.
It's interesting. We perhaps have two panelists here who have very opposing views. One is perhaps a hare. One is perhaps a tortoise. We'll find out a bit more in a moment as we look more into the news that's current.
Travel Market Life.
And now we're going to be diving into the news, get some of a quick response session, hopefully, from our panelists to get their thoughts on some of these developments that's happening in the industry. News that is pretty much fresh off the press. So first one, MPs back calls for hospitality VAT cut in parliamentary debate. The UK has one of the highest rates of VAT for hospitality in Europe, which is a significant drag on our competitiveness on the world stage. Although it does sit behind Denmark, which is at 25%, UK 20%, see Greece at 13%, Spain 10%, Germany 7%. So to both of you, where do you stand on this, and how much will it really sort of massage and improve the opportunity for the hospitality industry to really drive forward?
I think we should push for it. I think we should push for it to bring back the UK in a competitive environment, because right now, and not only from the hospitality industry, but economically speaking, in the UK, I'm not any expert on the economical dynamics of the country, but seeing the for example, like the Swiss franc GBP, the pound has been very weak and is getting weaker and weaker, and that's a sign as well that the economy in the UK is not going in the right direction. So I think like we need any initiatives to bring back this competitiveness of the UK market in regard to other more competitive markets. And I believe the VAT cut could be a significant help for the hospitality industry. I know that some big players in a market in the UK are pushing for this, and yeah, I believe we should try to go this way.
Do you really see it hinder your business, Johnny?
It depends. I mean, firstly, I don't think government are ever going to reduce it, full stop. But it depends on what, if they did, hypothetically, what angle do they take? Are they going to, like they did in during the COVID time when they reduced the VAT level but made it explicitly clear that saving was not for the customer's benefit, that was for the business benefit to be able to retain more of the revenue?
Mm.
Or is it going to be like it was 10 or 12 years ago when they reduced it from 17.5 to 15, where the message was explicitly clear that the VAT saving was to be passed on to the customer? So, again, I can't see it happening. If the message is to help boost the business's profitability and the company can retain the saving, I mean, yes, it will make a difference, but from experience, I know that we will get a lot of angry people who will want the discount or the benefit of the discount given to them, and it's a difficult conversation.
Did you find it when you had to pass it back to the customer when it went down to 15%? Did you feel it recharged the business from a consumer perspective? Did you see much more purchases and revenue coming through?
Not really. Certainly not revenue, because I mean we were getting the same net revenue overall. Back in that period when it happened, there was a lot of travel restrictions. The world wasn't in a great place. We rely on a lot of corporate business, and if corporate companies aren't traveling because of, you know, global situations or economic situations, then they're not going to travel regardless of what the VAT rate is. So it's nice in theory and it's a great idea. If it was rolled out and the message, like I said before, was the benefit is to the business, not the customer. Because if you're willing to spend £100 or £200 on a hotel as a private traveler, the VAT rates are relevant to you. If it's 1% or 50%, it makes no difference. You've still got to spend that price to stay in the hotel, but it does impact and benefit the business hugely if it's a lower VAT rate. Now, if you're a corporate traveler or a corporate customer, that makes a big difference to your travel, because you're, let's take a round number, £100 purchase price. The VAT is irrelevant to you, so when you net it out, you could be paying anything from £75-£80 to £90-£95. So your cost is significant as the person paying the bill.
Mm.
And then corporate customers are going to go, well, we used to pay £80 and now we've got to pay £90, but actually the total spend price is the same, but it's costing us more money. We can't afford to travel as much, or we can't afford to send as many people off to this hotel or that hotel for their conferences or events or traveling salesmen or whatever it might be. And therefore they put a moratorium on it and go, no unessential travel. And then the hotel loses out.
Story number two, only 27% of travellers rebook the same hotel amid cost of living crisis. So according to the 2023 UK Hospitality Impact Study, guests also cited taking fewer holidays, taking shorter breaks and opting for staycations as a way of combating the cost of living crisis. I mean, Thibault, you work across Europe. You've got hotels, properties that you look after. Are you sort of seeing these sort of patterns happen across Europe? Europeans are staying put perhaps and rebooking hotels more and maybe not taking so many longer overseas holidays or abroad holidays?
I have a different feeling on the data we are seeing right now. For example, we are seeing a quite a big uptrend when it comes to the vacation for February, like the coming winter holidays. But yet we are behind when it comes to the Easter vacation in March and in April. So I feel as well, going back to the shorter booking window, where people are protecting themselves in a very short period, but not much more in advance. I feel as well that people may be tempted to travel less, but spend maybe the same in a shorter period of time. So, for example, like we are seeing like maybe slightly longer length of stays, where people are staying longer in a hotel rather than before. But I don't feel they will come back later in the year. So that's kind of a changing trend we are seeing right now, and that's most probably linked to the cost of living, as you mentioned, where people are counting every cent they can and making sure they allocate their budget accordingly, because that's becoming very expensive now. And with the flights, because hotel is one, but now even the flight are on the roof for some destination, and that's a cost which are also impacting the full dynamics. So yeah, I believe there is a lot of change on the customer behavior. Staycation is something which has been very popular right after the pandemic or during the pandemic as well. And that's a new trend that we are seeing. So yes, staycation is very popular in the UK. Like in London, we are seeing a lot of people like doing staycation. But in other destinations, staycation is not as popular as we see currently in the UK. But yeah, definitely some changing trends.
Now, Johnny, you said that you had introduced a loyalty program, members club within Tarifa Hotels. Now, within this report as well, it said that 62% are also said to be interested in loyalty programs that would really help them rebook, make them more likely to rebook. How is that sort of loyalty program going for you? And are you seeing more of your customers rebook because of their experience, and is it higher this year on the books, or has it been higher in the last couple of years than previously?
We've experimented in this field for many years. Previously, we did, so the current program we have, we refer to it more as a members program than a loyalty program. The difference being that generally you expect better benefits the more loyal you are, whereas currently we're just offering a fixed discount for members, and they can avail of that, which non-members don't see. Whether you stay one night or and never again, or if you stay 20, 30 nights a year, you get the same benefit of the rate discount. So there's no additional benefit for your extended loyalty, if that makes sense. And I don't want to disrespect the term of loyalty. By all means, please come back and keep staying with us, and we'll keep giving you the discount price. We used to run a loyalty program where you got additional in-stay benefits as well. We found that the sign-up rate to that was very high, but the extended loyalty to that program was incredibly low. And we would get, you know, several thousand people a year sign up to the program, and maybe 1% of them would rebook. And it was an expensive program to maintain for us.
Thibault, you got something to say? Come on.
Yeah, because I don't think it's the loyalty program as such which will incentive the people to book or not book, but it's more about the personalization of your experience and the communication as well, which make people rebook to a specific hotel. And it all starts by having the right data. So by signing up to the loyalty program, you also show an intention that to keep to keep your data and to keep updated with what's going on with this specific property. So you collect data to make sure the next time you come and the communication that you receive are much more personalized than before. And for me, as such, I would love to come back to a property saying like, welcome back, Mr. Catala. Do you would like to see the same room as you had before? And I know that you took the quattro formaggi pizza. I would like the same tonight at dinner. Mm-hmm. And that's the wall. And that's something which is not expensive. That's not only happening in a Four Seasons or only happening in a Rosewood. That's something which, with the right data and the right information, and maybe a simple loyalty program to identify your most regular guest, that you can do, and that will be a big wow, and people will keep going back for years and for years.
So, talking about personalized experiences, then this is our news story three, our final news story before we head over to the quiz. So, there is a new London hotel. Yes, it's a London hotel owned by the restaurant chain that owns Karen's Diner. On the website, it says, if you thought Karen's Diner is bad, you've seen nothing yet. Welcome to Karen's Hotel, possibly the worst hotel stay you'll ever encounter. Get ready for an absurdly fun experience. Prices start at £179 for the package of two, and it includes an overnight stay at the hotel and a meal at Karen's Diner, as well as breakfast in the morning. Guys, are you in? Are you going? Are you heading to Karen's Hotel?
I won't mind.
Maybe.
I wouldn't mind. But it's very interesting because it's a perfect illustration of a new trend, which is all about experiences. People are looking for experiences. They're looking for physical experiences where they can feel and they can touch and be there. People have been very tired of being locked down, being in front of a screen and so on. They want to go there, experience things, and get smashed in the face by the Karen's dinner and Karen's hotel experience. And as part of the thing, they go back home to their friend and say like, oh, this one was the worst one. I got smashed and the people were swearing at me and they throw the bill at me and so on. But it's a story to tell. That's an experience. And that's what people are looking after. I believe it's genius.
It's a novelty, you know. I don't think I would book myself to go, but if somebody said to me, a friend or whatever, go, or a colleague or whatever, he said, you know, oh, come on, let's go to this Karen's Diner place. I go, yeah, okay, I'll go and see what it's like because it's different. But it's theatrical. It's not a shit restaurant. It's designed and, you know, it's scripted and cast to be that.
Yeah.
And the servers and the staff are all playing a role. And you know, so it's not that it's, you know, it's not a crap eatery that's got really bad TripAdvisor reviews. It's a good eatery, and you just go for a theatrical experience. It's like a murder mystery night or something like that. There's a lot of other stuff going on. But I think it'd be quite fun to do once. Would I stay in the hotel? No, probably not. But
it's a little bit too much. You can't get away, can you? Guys, those contributions were absolute gold. Thank you very much indeed. Right, okay, moving over to the quick quiz where we get to challenge our industry experts.
Oh dear. When are they joining?
Travel Market Life.
Up now is a quick quiz where it's the best of five and our panelists are challenged on their industry knowledge. I have told them to bring a buzzer, a bell or a horn and something that makes an instant noise. So we're going to hear now what it is that they brought with them. Firstly up, Johnny, what's your buzzer of choice? Got a bell.
My bell, my servant.
And Tybalt, what do you have?
My kid's instrument.
Well, let's see one who wins through then on this one then, shall we? Let's go. Right. First question is an industry question. The Waldorf Astoria, La Memoria, and Claridge's are all types of famous what? Johnny.
Hotel,
yes, it's a hotel, of course.
My God, I was expecting something much more complicated. I was like already going into the value of the asset and so on, CapEx program and so on, and hotels.
I told you, this isn't going to be any complex quiz. I mean, it might be challenging in some respects, but no, I'm not asking you to delve deep into professionalism here, okay?
Okay. Now I know.
Okay.
Right, the history question. How long has the oldest hotel been running? Yes, Tybalt.
Uh, 100, 50 years?
Nope. Johnny.
I actually used to know this question. It was one of the
but
things
you don't anymore.
At college, but I can't remember anymore. But it was somewhere in the American Midwest when someone had a saloon and open rooms. I'm going to say, no, wait a minute.
It's in Japan.
Oh, I see. No, you're not. You've lost. I've run out of time. Too much talking.
That's in Japan. I'm the closest one. It's in Japan.
Yes. Tibbalt, you've won. You've won, obviously, and you've used ChatGPT to ask. Because you're correct. It's in Japan. It's been open since 705 or 1,318 years, although apparently it hasn't necessarily been out open consistently throughout that period, but it's been run by the same family, which is incredible.
What about the inn in Bethlehem, though?
I don't think that's there anymore.
Right. Oh, still open. Okay. Oh,
over to geography. Geography now. With an interior of about 5,500 square meters, the world's largest ice hotel is located where? Johnny.
Greenland?
Nope. Want to have a go, Tibble? Yes.
Not Norway?
Yes, well done. That is 1 point each. Well, actually, two. Sort of one with that
one and a half
question. Yeah, one and a half.
It's going well, Ryan. It's going well.
It is. I'm going to have to go much simpler on the questions, aren't I? You're not very good at guessing. Okay, destination question. Paris is set to host the 2024 Olympics. Name the other year or years that Paris has been the host for the Summer Games. We got a Frenchman on the line. He should know.
No clue. I wasn't born, probably.
How quickly can I do?
No guess.
No guess. Googling it. No, Googling
five,
it.
Five, four, three, two, one.
1924
and 1900.
That's
cheating, Johnny.
That's cheating.
I'm sorry.
That was the closest one.
Both of you.
Yeah, I did Google that.
1900 and 1924, yes.
Oh, so... That's 100 years since they've had it.
And a technology question now. Are we ready?
Yep.
In what year was it possible to make hotel bookings online? Yes, ooh, that's Johnny. Crazy.
1996.
No. Tibble, yes. Do you want to have a go?
I was like a 19. Oh, it's 1998.
No, it's in fact 40 years this year, 30 years this year, 1994. So Johnny was closest. So that's two to 2 points each there. So for the bonus point.
So what medium was that on, Ryan?
Online.
through. Come on, back up your answer. Who was it?
What was the bonus point? What was the name of the company that made it possible?
Oh, God. Expedia.
The Mintel.
Travelweb.com.
Never heard of them. Oh, well.
All right, we've got another alternative bonus question. Let's see if you get this. What hotel brand is reputedly the world's first to have an online booking made? Yes, Tibon.
I would guess Marriott.
I'll guess Hilton.
Holiday Inn.
I was going to go IHG and I should have done. Sugar.
I didn't know. I was thinking it was the Marriott because Marriott have the first revenue management system.
Well, it's a draw there. Well done, guys. Congratulations. Yeah. Your knowledge is superior. Guys, thank you very much for taking part in today's episode, this month's February's edition of the Hospitality Monthly Review Show.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
For more, go to Travel Market Life. The music Sensation by Zach Nelson is reproduced under license from Storyblocks. Travel Market Life is a Haynes Marcoms digital marketing agency production, serving the travel and technology industries.